Second hour on this Thursday. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Nick Frazier. Talking Titans all 3 hours today as the Two-Tone Blue get ready for their home debut in 2025. Preseason game number 3 tomorrow night against the Vikings. Talked a lot of Cam Ward in the first hour. We're going to flip over to the defensive side of the ball here as L'Jarius Sneed has returned from the PUP list after about 10 months since the last time that he was out there on the field for that Week 5 Colts game. Took the helmet to the quad, then some knee maintenance, knee cleanup, but he is back out on the practice field. TD, you were out there yesterday, got to speak with L'Jarius a little bit after practice, got to see him out there during individual period. He says he's confident that he'll be ready for Week 1. Do we feel like L'Jarius Sneed will be out there against the Broncos when the Titans head to Denver?
Yeah, I think he will. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the speed and performance staff and the nutritionist staff. One of the things that I saw Sneed doing a lot, and pretty much all of the injured guys, Brian Bell, who is the assistant director of performance, that's the big dude with the dreads that you always see.
Yeah.
He's like the get back coach during the game. Like, he tells Callahan to get back. He also has to be shouted out, because the work that he does with these guys that are working back from injury, I mean, he's over there with the bag and the D linemen are punching on him, but then he's like directing the DBs like Kevin Winston Jr. and L'Jarius Sneed. That's a part of why I think Sneed is going to be ready. But bigger picture is this. Cornerback is one of the positions, like, it's one of the most independent positions, right? Yeah, you're going to get safety help over top from time to time. Absolutely. But the way a L'Jarius Sneed plays is just like, hey, look, C guy,
that's get your guy.
You know what I mean? That cat right there, you travel with that cat. You know, cat covers. And he's one of those DBs that could play left, right, as well as nickel. And so when you have a guy that you want to move around, Courtland Sutton, you want to get the sides in the slot, okay, no problem. You got Sneed, you drop him down, and you say, L'Jarius, put hands on him. I need you to have a conversation at the line of scrimmage with him. And I'm not talking about with words. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I say all that to say, will he be the same player that he was before? No, not in Denver. Maybe eventually. But because cornerback is such an independent position, I don't think it's going to take much for him to get back on the field. But as he said, the conditioning-wise, like, you got to be a John Deere tractor. Because as receivers, right, we could run a go route and tap that helmet.
Yeah.
Hey, I need a break. You know what I mean? And the next guy come in. You can't do that as a DB.
No.
You got to keep going and going and going. So that is something to take note of.
Especially starting the season in Denver, where I forget what the record is for the Broncos in September games at home, but it is one of the toughest places to play early in the season because guys aren't in full-on football shape.
Already.
And it's like, all right, now you're a mile high and the air is thinner, makes it a little more difficult, so we'll see. But I did hear Robbie and Paul talk about it this morning that even when the Titans traded for him last year, L'Jarius Sneed was not talked about as a guy who's going to be your practice Iron Man who's out there every single day. It was kind of like, hey, he's going to practice when he has to practice, but he's going to be ready for Sunday. Is that kind of what the plan is going to be again this year? Is like,
yeah,
you might see him be limited at practice every once in a while, but for the most part, it's just get him ready to be at his best top ability when you get to Sunday.
Yeah, L'Jarius Sneed is on the Kawhi Leonard program. You know what I mean?
They're
going to load manage him. And I could even draw a baseball analogy. Barry Bonds, right? You play a night game, you're not going to see him the day game afterward. Like, it just doesn't happen. You know what I mean? So those types of situations where he'll probably be limited in practice, and then you'll see him, on Wednesday, you'll see him limited Thursday, and then he'll be out there for the full walkthrough on Friday. Like, that's probably how it's going to go.
Kind of a quick tangent, but, you know, speaking of like a back-to-back or a day game after a night game, the Titans' schedule is so unique this year because they play every game on Sunday. Like, there's no Monday night game, no Thursday night game, so there's no – yes, you don't get that mini-bye, which I know a lot of teams talk about, but you also don't have any short weeks, which I think is important too. Obviously, with flex scheduling, who knows? I would make the guess the Titans aren't going to get flexed to a Thursday night game. But
maybe a Sunday night.
Maybe Sunday night, which I guess shortens you up a little bit for that next week. But it does allow the Titans to get into a little bit of a routine there, and you don't have to worry about a guy like L'Jarius Sneed, who, yeah, if he's on that load management plan, it might be tough for him to go Sunday, Thursday, but you can kind of have a consistent plan for all those guys throughout the year because your schedule is consistent and you play Sunday, usually at noon every single week.
Yeah, and that's one of the things because, you know, getting to the game 6 hours early, like Cam Ward did. I don't think he's going to be able to do that too much. I guess he'll be at games at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. But, yeah, I think that no primetime games is something that will allow the schedule to be consistent.
The Titans also have just such a strange schedule because they only have three home games until November. But then they don't leave home from November 2nd to December 7th. So it's like I guess it works out both ways. They'll be on the road a lot early, at home a lot late. L'Jarius Sneed, if he is healthy and if he's back out on the field, do you think the Titans can get anything close to what they expected when they traded for him? Like a year and a half ago, he was considered at worst, I think, a top five cornerback in the league. Even when he was healthy for the Titans last year, I think he left a little bit to be desired. There were some plays where he got beat over the top. We talked about the Snoop Huntley experience and that he missed a couple of those in that Dolphins game. Do you think the Titans are getting just a starting level quality corner, or do you think L'Jarius Sneed can get back to being more than that and be a Pro Bowl caliber player?
It's hard to say that he could go back to where he was before the injury because as you mentioned, we didn't see that lockdown guy. He did have the hamstring that kind of he had to toughen out in Miami. And, yeah, Tyreek Hill got behind him. Jalen Waddle got behind him.
Yep.
You know, but at the same time, it's tough for me to project him being a top five corner again.
Right.
It's one of those things, you got to show it.
Yep.
You got to show it. But the beauty of that, and I always love it, is when you have a very, very talented athlete get challenged that way. I love to see, okay, what is this going to bring out in you? Sometimes it makes you elevate. Other times, it's like, yeah, it's over for him.
You get to see what he's really made of.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really telling when, to bring up the ESPN, the top 10 players at every position article, those execs and scouts and coaches still had an honorable mention for L'Jarius Sneed, and it's like I think everybody kind of realizes if he does get back to top form, this is a guy who's formidable out there, but it is just tough to count on anything like that based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, without a doubt.
L'Jarius Sneed is back out on the practice field, though. He was activated from the PUP list yesterday. There is the small detail of his legal issues that have been floating around over the last couple of months. We did get an update on that from Paul Kaharsky yesterday. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up next. This fall, live at Pinnacle at Nashville Yards, Tim McGraw will perform at Trinetics Rock the Cradle. This event is sure to be a great time celebrating a great cause. Proceeds from the event will support newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts or questions for TD, make sure to get those in. We're trying to get to all of them before the end of the show. We'll get to some coming up in the next segment as well. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Nick Frazier, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Nick Frazier, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Updating on L'Jarius Sneed, who is back out on the practice field after spending about 10 months away from practice, from gameplay, after getting hurt against the Colts in Week 5 last year. He is back out there in a limited fashion. He said he is confident in his ability to be out there for Week 1 against Denver. TD, quickly, there was the other hiccup of his legal issues with him and his associate and the car dealership down in Texas. It does seem like that is going to not be a huge factor for him. Paul Kaharsky on paulkaharsky.com reporting yesterday that the criminal case has been sent to a grand jury for a September 25th hearing, but Legarius Sneed's his charge has been reduced to a misdemeanor for failure to report, because I guess in Texas he was a witness to the crime and he didn't report it. So it seems like he is not going to be at least punished in any kind of major way that could impact his ability to be on the field.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting update. We'll see what happens there. We know that that situation is just a mess. Shame on him for – you got to make better choices, right? You got to be careful who you associate yourself with. Good on him for saying, hey, man, like, I severed ties with him.
Don't see that guy anymore.
You can't have somebody put you in that type of situation, you know, and there's a scripture my mom used to always tell me. It was in Ecclesiastes, and it's bad association spoil useful habits. And it's very true, and that's the case here. I don't know what's going to make of the civil case. You know, you got this lawyer who's saying, hey, you know, we're not suing for money, but we want $1 million. that whole thing is ironic to me. But I think he needs – once this gets, like, done away with, he's got to stay on the straight. Like, you got to –
right.
You know what I mean? And I know it's tough because, like, you know, you come from – a background where these are the types of things that happen. Now, me saying that these are the types of things that happen is not excusing it. It's just saying these are the types of, like, you tend to fall into these kinds of situations, so you have to be extra cautious.
Right. I mean, I think back to two really well-done documentaries I've watched of, like, the Michael Vick situation. Of Michael Vick wasn't the one who was, like, planning all of the, you know, the dogfighting and stuff that got him in trouble. But the people he was surrounding himself with and was allowing them to live in a house that he bought, they were doing all this and he was funding it. Like, it is all about who you associate yourself with. Mm-hmm. And it's good to hear that Legarius Sneed has at least cut ties with his former personal assistant, I believe, is what obviously the guy who was in the car with him that day down in Texas. So the hope is that the injury is getting better, the legal situation is getting sorted out, and Legarius Sneed will be ready to go for week one against Denver. Let's get back to your text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 8566 asks, TD, it seems like there are a lot of wide receiver needy teams that are calling around trying to trade for a wide receiver. We saw a couple of those yesterday. 49ers traded for Sky Moore from the Chiefs, and the Saints actually took away a weapon from Bo Nix and the Broncos, the Titans' week one opponent, Devon Vele, going to New Orleans. This text is about the Titans trading Calvin Ridley, which is just not going to happen. But he says, if someone calls the Titans, what would it take for that trade? I would ask the question of, like, would Van Jefferson maybe be available in trade talks if you feel like some of the younger guys have beat him out?
Yeah, I think, you know, Van Jefferson is a guy that could be made available. I see this, though. Van is a very – like, he's a high-character guy.
Yep.
I know the drop against the Falcons. Like, obviously, he would want that back, too. But he's a high character. He's good to have in the locker room. He's a good route runner. I think in this wide receiver group where they have three veterans, like, that's it. You know what I mean? Bryce Oliver – is a second year player. Alec Iemanar, Chimere Dike, these are first-year players. They need to be shown the way. Although the results don't necessarily come to the surface with Van Jefferson and the catches and the numbers, et cetera, but he is a good guy to have around. Yeah, if you could get a fourth-round pick, oh, yeah, make the deal. You know what I mean? But – you're not going to get that. So I don't think that he's someone that should be traded.
Yeah, I kind of find it hard to see a team giving you anything of significant value for Van Jefferson.
Right.
And based on what we've seen, I don't know if you feel confident enough that Iemanar, Oliver, DK are going to be instant impact kind of players. And we're going to talk more about that wide receiver room later on in the show. Skyler with an interesting question here. And I will preface this with, the Cowboys aren't going to trade Micah Parsons. I think I understand Jerry Jones is kind of crazy, and there was I guess the documentary came out last night of the quote going around was Jimmy Johnson basically saying, I don't want guys who have asthma. So Jerry Jones is crazy. Maybe something does go wrong and Micah Parsons does get traded. I would say it would be a very long shot. But Skyler asks, with the Titans' first-round pick maybe being expected to be a top-five pick, could you see them trading it away and maybe not having to give it up as much to go get Micah Parsons?
I mean, it's possible, but
right.
I don't think this team is a Micah Parsons away from contending. Will that help them a lot? Oh, yeah, for sure. But their objective is to acquire draft picks, not trade them.
Right.
So I don't think that necessarily falls in line with, you know, the draft, develop, retain mindset that's sprinkling in some free agents. I don't think it comes in line with it. But, I mean, obviously – Micah Parsons is an exception. So it's something you have to consider. You absolutely have to consider.
He's one of those players where, like, we get the text of, should the Titans trade for Trey Hendrickson? And the answer is no, because you'd have to give up draft capital to get a guy whose window of his prime doesn't match up with your window of trying to be a contender. Mm-hmm. But for Micah Parsons, his window is much longer and is just starting. I think if you could get it down to less than multiple first-round picks, I think that's a deal you do. But I agree with you. We talked about it yesterday about how the Titans, with all of these quarterback-needy teams and a lot of quarterback prospects that are currently being talked about in the first round, the Titans could be in a spot, if they're picking high next year, to cash in and get multiple first-round picks back in a Trey Lance-type deal, mm-hmm. where the Dolphins got three to move back from three. So I think that's more of what the Titans should be doing, is you're trying to make a deal that gets you a ton of high draft capital rather than give away draft picks for a guy who, yeah, Micah Parsons in 3 years still is going to be really good, but does he make you that much better right now? Not really.
Right. And I think, you know, that's the main thing to consider. But man, it would be nice.
It would be fun to watch Micah Parsons on Sundays every week.
It would be nice if I were the Titans to have it. That's for sure.
I agree with that. Let's talk about these linebackers for a second here. We're going to talk more about them and some of the other spots that could be up for grabs as we head into the final preseason game. Cody Barton, I think, has been really good so far. And I think that was not your flashiest free agency signing. And a lot of Titans fans, when they signed him, were probably just like, who? Why? Yeah, like,
it's a substance signing.
But it seems like he has really turned into a leader, and he's a guy who can do everything for this team. Like, maybe not as good in coverage as he is in the run game, but it does feel like it's an upgrade from what they had there last year, and he's a guy who can be a leader in the middle of their defense.
I think it brings a more disciplined linebacker, a more disciplined center of the defense. Kenneth Murray was one of those guys where – like, you tell him, hey, I just go bust stuff up, you know, and that's what he would do. But sometimes in the process of doing that, like, he'll misshoot a gap, and next thing you know, there's a wide-open gap,
right.
And that running back is bumping his head on the goalpost. So you got to be careful with that, but you don't get that as much with Cody Barton. I think, you know, the flip side of that is you may not get as many big plays that go your favor, but he's going to allow less big plays against you. So that's a good thing. And then the effect he has on the younger guys, Cedric Gray, James Williams, talking to them, like, they'll tell you real quick, he's helped me make sure my eyes are where they need to be. And then it goes back to the confidence from preparation. They're able to play more confidently. Cedric Gray was telling me after the Falcons game how it's starting to become – where the game is slowing down for him. Not necessarily. And when I say the game's slowing down, that doesn't mean the opposing team is playing slower. He's just processing faster and more naturally. And when you're able to just react, it's a lot different than like, oh, wait a minute. Like, okay, I saw the fullback is coming here. That tells me that, wait a minute, but he could. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you just look, oh, fullback's going there, I got to shoot that gap.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And those are the types of things that you see Cedric Gray and James Williams doing now, where it's just trigger, 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 trigger. Go do what you got to do. as opposed to thinking so much.
We've seen them both, I would say, in both preseason games. The guy who stood out the most has been an inside linebacker. Mm-hmm. In Tampa, James Williams, from the opening kickoff, made a play.
Set the tone.
Cedric Gray blows up the running back to get a sack on the first drive, had an interception that was called back due to offsetting penalties. Who's going to start next to Cody Barton? We will talk about that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts, questions, anything for Teron Davenport, get those in. We'll try and get to all of them before the end of the show. Tune in to 102.5 The Game this Saturday at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week. That's right, college football is back. Week zero, Iowa State, Kansas State, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circa Sportsbook. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Nick Frazier, next man up, 102.5 The Game.
Point when Cedric maybe got over a hump a little bit and started to settle in?
Well, I think Cedric's playing with confidence right now. You know, he's not second-guessing himself, and he's just being who he is. He's being a downhill player. He's scrappy. He's tough. And, you know, he seeks contact. So I think that, you know, he's settled into who he is. He's getting comfortable playing within the system, and, you know, he keeps making plays.
That was Titans defensive coordinator Denard Wilson talking about his second year inside linebacker Cedric Gray, who really showed up on Friday night in Atlanta, made a couple of big plays, and put his name in the hat to possibly be one of the Titans starting inside linebackers week one against Denver. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Nick Frazier with you. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to text or call. TD, the inside linebacker position, we just talked about Cody Barton a little bit. I think heading into camp, it was viewed as maybe the weakest position group on this team. And there was a lot of question marks of, all right, well, you brought in Cody Barton, who's been a fine player in the NFL, and you've got a bunch of young guys. Otis Reese was included in there at that point, and these two second-year guys, James Williams and Cedric Gray. Now it feels like that trio of Barton, Williams, and Gray could actually be a really productive group based on what we've seen so far in the preseason.
Yeah, and it will also have an impact special teams-wise, whether it's Gray or Williams playing special teams. I think when you look at two young players like this, and the thing that's exciting is their opposite, right? You got Cedric Gray, who's a more natural linebacker. He just, that's what he's been pretty much all his life, you know. So you have that, and you have him, as he mentioned, to, you know, playing, as Denard Wilson mentioned, to playing with more confidence, playing with more instinct and just more naturally. That's a good thing because he missed the first, well, he missed all of the preseason, right? And then he had the injury and he landed here and was given the green dot. And it was just a lot. You could tell that the kid was just thinking too much and it was just tough. He was able to weather that storm. He came back. James Williams on the other side of things, you know, kind of just because of the way he plays with aggression. And that's not to say Gray doesn't, but just his style of play allowed him to kind of show up a little bit earlier. I think when you look at both of them, I mean, between, like, we could put them together. Like, you really have something. But that former safety background for James Williams, it helps him, like, in the coverage side of things. It helps him on the special teams as well. And for him, it was just getting the eyes right. But now that he's learning to get his eyes in the right place and figuring out just like how things come up on you faster as a linebacker than the safety, you're seeing the adjustment be made. But end of the day, like I told him, I say he reminds me of Telvin Smith, right? And just the aggressiveness and the I don't give a darn about my body, I'm just going to throw myself in there and make plays. Like, that mindset is very similar.
Yeah, James Williams, I think, is going to be the guy, similar to a Kenneth Murray last year who you were talking about. It's like, he's going to shoot a gap, and when he's right, he's going to make a play. Like, the amount of tackle for loss that Kenneth Murray had last year was insane, and it's like, you'd see him flash, but then there were times where, you're right, he shoots the wrong gap, and it's an 80-yard touchdown. You hope you can limit those plays with James Williams while also making sure that he keeps playing with those instincts and not have him thinking too much.
Right.
But you can get those kind of impact plays that we did see from Kenneth Murray from a guy like James Williams this season.
Yeah, you can. And, I mean, look, you could get them from Cedric Gray as well. You saw him come in and blow up the linebacker. I mean, the running back, and Carlos Watkins was able to clean up on the sack. I think you could definitely get those. And those blitzes, we've seen a lot of those all.
Yeah.
Like, those linebackers, they're coming. You know, that's a good thing.
You just tweeted it out, the coordinated pass rush. Mm-hmm. And the guy who maybe doesn't get enough credit on that play is Femi Oladejo, who he made sure that Easton Stick couldn't escape out the backside of the pocket. He collapsed that side, and then Cedric Gray, after lighting up the running back, was able to combine with Carlos Watkins for the
sack. He got the wide rush, and he forced the quarterback to step up. You know, and like I put in the tweet, man, I remember first talking about this with Lamar Jackson, you know, when we did the Whiteboard Wednesday and drew up what ended up being the plan that they used. I'm not saying they saw it and said, hey, I'm going to use this, but we were in line, same line of thought, and how to stop. They didn't stop him. He had 500 yards. But how to slow Lamar Jackson down. And it's just like National Geographic, man. You know, you see the pride of lions, right? And you see the two kind of go one way and force the gazelle this direction. And the gazelle's like, yeah, I'm going to outrun you. I could get away. I got an escape door. Wait a minute. Behind that door is a whole nother group of lions ready to pounce. And I think it's the same thing in that pass rush.
So Cedric Gray and James Williams, I think we're going to see a lot of both of them this year, obviously. I think they both earned opportunities. But do you think maybe it's a better fit next to Cody Barton to have a James Williams, who's maybe a little bit of a different kind of player? Or do you think Cedric Gray makes more sense in that second inside linebacker spot?
I think they both complement him. And I think, you know, it's really going to depend on situations, right? Because in passing situations, it's probably better to have Williams. In first and second down, more run-likely situations, it's probably better to have Gray. But the other thing that you got to put into this is Kevin Winston Jr., Quandre Diggs, right?
Yeah.
Denard Wilson is a DB-centric coach, right? And so you're going to see a lot of three. He did a lot of three safety looks in Philly, right, when he had Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, right? And he had the other DBs, the safeties there. And you look at Baltimore, you know, you had Geno Stone, you had Kyle Hamilton. Like, they were making sure that they used multiple safeties.
And
Chuck Clark, yeah. So I think when you look at here, the good thing is Amani Hooker, Xavier Woods, Quandre Diggs, Kevin Winston Jr., they could all tackle. So you could go big nickel with those guys. And, you know, have one of your one linebacker type of look, or even dime with those guys, rather. And the thing is, in passing situations, Winston, I think, gives you somebody that, if you remember Dane Cruikshank, how they used to use him to
the tight
end. He didn't do much, but he lined up against tight ends and he had some success.
You mentioned Kevin Winston, and I did want to touch on this. Winston and Tavondre Sweat have both been out for a while. And I don't know if you have concern about them, because they aren't long-term injuries, at least is what it seems. And, like, obviously, Tavondre Sweat is just, he got his tonsils out, but had the abdominal stuff early. Mm. Is it worrisome that they've both missed so much time, where those are two young players that you hope are going to be big pieces of your defense moving forward, and they did miss a lot of development time over the last couple of weeks for Sweat, his second training camp, Winston his first?
Yeah, I think the main thing, Winston, I don't think you're going to get the full Winston this year. Just, I mean, generally you have that from ACL, but then on top of that, the soreness and everything that he has going, eventually, so next year I would assume that he'll have a starting safety role. I think maybe later this year he's probably going to move into it, but you are missing development and you're missing reps, but it's like you got to sacrifice that for the long haul to have this man fully recovered from the ACL. So it's a trade-off.
Right.
Now, Sweat, the tonsillitis, the main thing with him is the reps. Like, you want him getting out there and getting in the condition to play football. Now, they're going to Denver, right? And it's going to be – like, guys are going to get winded in the pregame warm-up.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, it's already extenuating circumstances. And then you put on top of that the fact that he's been out for a couple weeks. Yeah, that's going to be tough. He's going to have to put in extra work to be able to get right conditioning-wise, because you can't replicate a game. You could somewhat replicate it in practice where it's like, you know, we're just going to have you go 10 straight snaps, boom, do it, suck it up and go. You know what I mean? But you can't do that in the, you know, in the training room or working out on your own.
Yeah, like we talked about it last year heading into the season of what is Tavondre Sweat going to be able to handle a full workload, and will he be more of a guy who plays half your snaps instead of three quarters of your snaps? And he proved that he can be a guy who's out there a lot, but it is a tough ask when he's missed 3 weeks of training camp, hasn't played in the preseason, to go out to Denver and immediately put it into high gear. And you wonder if maybe he's going to be limited in that game when he's back out there. So it's not ideal, especially because the depth behind Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat is not great at the on the interior of the defensive line. But the good news is, obviously, it's tonsillitis. It's not like it's going to be something that lingers. He should be back soon. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will get to your phones coming up next. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport here on this Thursday morning. Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. Wrapping up the second hour here on this Thursday. Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Nick Frazier with you. Titans are off today, getting ready for their final preseason game tomorrow night against the Minnesota Vikings before 2 weeks to get ready for Denver, and going to be a tough one against the Broncos. But we got some questions about L'Jarius Sneed. Will he be ready? It seems like he's trending in that direction. He said that he is confident that he will be ready for week one. So good to see that. TD, it seems like we might have opened up a can of worms by bringing up Micah Parsons here. I see some comments in the YouTube chat, and I see some comments in our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com about why wouldn't you trade for Micah Parsons? Do you want a pick that could turn into Micah Parsons? It's like, what's behind door number one and door number two? 8252 says, Titans are projected to draft Caleb Downs. Are they a safety away from being a contender? My point, get Parsons if you can. The problem here is that it's not going to take just one first-round pick to get Micah Parsons.
Wait, are we doing preseason projections?
I know. Are we looking at mock drafts in August?
I gotta do like the Jordan meme. Stop it. Get some help. Come on, man.
No, it's ridiculous, and it's like you have no idea, first of all, what these college players are gonna do. You have no idea what pick the Titans are gonna have. So any mock drafts at this point are just futile. But the point that you're trying to make too is that it's a one for one trade of like Micah Parsons versus whatever player you pick in the first round. I was saying that if you could get it down to less than two first-round picks, you consider it. But less than two first-round picks means a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and probably a third-round pick to get him.
Right.
That's still a lot of picks that you need to build the foundation of this team.
Exactly. And I think that's the understanding. Now, if it's a first-round pick, you more than likely want to do the trade. You know what I mean?
If the Cowboys say, hey, we'll give you Micah Parsons for your first-round pick next year, I think you call it into the league office before they realize what mistake they've made.
Yeah, and you work that deal out, and hey, you get the extension done. You know what I mean? But I think if you look at the way the schedule is, because Micah Parsons is, what, 27? Let me see exactly how old he is. You know, I would say he has, what, 3 years left in his prime? He's 26. So 3 to 4 years left in his prime. The back end of that prime lines up, you know, with the schedule. Because I would say probably 27 is when you, like, really expect to be that team. You know what I'm saying? So it lines up that way. But it's just, how is he going to be in the times where it's a little rough? You know what I mean? How is he going to be? And that's where you have to have that heart-to-heart.
Yeah.
Like, look, man, we want you to be a part of this team. We know that you're a playmaker. We're gonna secure your pocket long-term. But you got to understand this is a process.
Yeah.
It's going to be frustrating, but it's a process.
And, again, having Micah Parsons would be great. It makes you better this year, and it gives you a foundational piece that you can work around for the next, like you said, 3, 4, 5 years. But that doesn't fix all the other holes on this team. Like, yes, you need an elite edge rusher. This team hasn't had an elite edge rusher in a long time. Like, you could say Harold Landry was solid. Brian Arakpo was solid. But you haven't had a game-changing guy on the edge in a while, and you need to find that. But you also don't really have any – I mean, Jarvis Brownlee Jr. looks like he's going to be a solid cornerback, but you haven't invested a whole lot of high draft picks in corner over the last couple of years. Mm. Wide receiver, you need some young players in there because Ridley's only going to be here for so long. And when you take guys in the fourth round, not everybody's Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like,
yeah,
most of the time they become second, third, fourth wide receivers. So you have a lot of premium positions that you need to invest draft capital in. Yes, Micah Parsons, I think if you could get him for a discount in terms of draft capital, great. But I don't think the Cowboys are just going to be giving him away.
No, they don't want to just give a good player, an elite player, away. So it's going to take some. You know, it's definitely going to take some. And even like, you know, I've seen some people say, well, hey, how about trading for Trey Hendrickson? That one's an even bigger no because he's got maybe two more years in his prime. So it just doesn't line up.
Well, and like Trey Hendrickson, you can tell that he's trying to take advantage of the fact that he just led the NFL in sacks. It's mm-hmm. like, hey, this is my last chance to get one more big deal.
Yep.
And I don't think somebody a couple days ago said Trey Hendrickson is the best pass rusher in the NFL. No, he had the most sacks in the NFL last year. But if you're projecting over the next 3 years, do you think Trey Hendrickson is going to be a top 10 pass rusher in the NFL? Probably not over a three-year span with the age that he's getting to. Nevada Josh on the text line says, would you want to trade Simmons for Parsons or Hendrickson? I mean, for Micah Parsons, maybe. If that's what the Cowboys wanted, if you could say like, hey, we'll give you Jeff Simmons a second and a fourth for Micah Parsons, maybe. But I don't really see that being a possibility either. First of all, I don't think Micah Parsons is getting traded. And Second, I think if Micah Parsons gets traded, he's going to try and force his way somewhere that's ready to compete right now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's the bigger.
He's going to tell the Titans if they worked out a trade, like let's say Mike Borgonzi and Steven and Jerry Jones work out a trade, Micah Parsons can tell his agent, like, hey, I'm not going to sign a deal with the Titans. Like, so don't even make that deal because the Titans aren't going to make that trade unless they have a deal worked out.
Yeah.
So
I could see like Miami or somewhere, Buffalo, you know, right, that type of situation.
A team that's ready to compete right now and feels like they can bring him in and he immediately becomes their best player on a championship team.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I think the Titans, if they had a chance to make the deal, I think they would. I just don't think it's all that realistic. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have any questions, thoughts for TD, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Titans and Vikings tomorrow. TD, last preseason game, who do you think has to have a big day? Whether that's for trying to make the team, trying to make the 53, or trying to solidify a starting spot with the competition that the Titans have on this roster?
Well, I say James Williams or Cedric Gray. I think you look at those guys. I think the O-line, you know, Jackson Slater.
Yeah.
Andrew Rupchich, Ali Udo, Jalen Duncan, John Ajuku. These guys have to have big games. I think it would help if Iron Manor could have a nice couple catches. Chimere Dike, you want to get him involved. Xavier Restrepo, he's on the roster bubble. I don't think he makes it, but him. Let's look at some of the other positions. Cornerback-wise, like, you would love to see Daryl Baker have a junior have a good game.
Marcus Harris.
I like Marcus Harris.
I was really impressed with him on Friday night because you hadn't heard a ton about him. You knew he was one of those late draft picks, but I thought he had a couple of really nice plays against the Falcons.
I like Marcus Harris, man. I like the fact that he never panics. And I watched, you know, Ray McCloud smoked him. Smoked him for a touchdown. I'm like, damn, Marcus. Right? But then later in that practice when they had, like, first team D, first team O, they're on the field. Everybody else is on the sideline watching. Yeah. He got beat deep along the right sideline. Well, the defense's left sideline. And I remember him getting beat, and the guy got bent by him. And a lot of times when that happens, right, you see the DBs, they look like they're falling. Like, they're just like, or they look like they're drowning in water, right? He didn't do that. He used his makeup speed. He caught up, and he forced the incompletion. And you look in the Falcons game.
Yep.
Same thing happened. caught up to the ball, showed the ball skills. He's a former receiver, he told me. Showed the ball skills, put his hand up and punched it out the air, and it was an incompletion. Those small things from a corner, especially a rookie corner, those are really good attributes. You know, the ball skills, but most importantly, the never panicking. And Denard Wilson spoke about Marcus Harris yesterday. He talked about watching the Miami game on purpose because he wanted to see how Marcus Harris did against Cam.
Yeah.
And he said, man, I saw the same thing. No panic. I saw it. And they were trying double moves, posts, and things like that, and he never panicked. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and the Titans, they desperately need some young corner depth. And yeah. Marcus Harris, if he can make the team and work his way up, it's good to have in a group that is much shakier than I think we expected it to be this year. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. One more hour to go with TD here on the program. Coming up next, we're going to get a little bit big picture here on the wide receiver front, because although there is battles for who's going to start at X and, you know, how many targets are these guys going to get, we kind of know who's going to be on the team at wide receiver outside of whether they keep six or seven. The big question is, beyond Calvin Ridley, who is going to be the most productive this year? Bryce Oliver yesterday, we saw the video. He made a nice grab.
That catch,
I believe,
was stupid.
You said all the reporters had the DeAndre Jordan face going on.
Yeah.
Will it be Bryce Oliver who steps up? Will it be Elik Iemanjir? Will it be Tyler Lockett? Who ends up being wide receiver two for the Titans this season? We ask that question coming up next. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Nick Frazier, heading to hour number three here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game.